up.
Wait, sorry. This is the east, isn't it?
This is the east.
God damn it.
Did I fuck that up?
It says west, but we just need to say east.
Yep, I did.
It's okay, I can just say. And then we have the east. And I don't know, switch that in. Or fucking leave it, whatever.
Right. Live from the Mundangerous World Tree in New York City, I'm your host Shane.
And I'm your host Ishan.
And welcome to episode 244 of Total Party Thrill, a podcast for game masters and players where we discuss our campaigns in order to inspire yours.
In this episode, we're traveling from the Sword Coast to the Endless Wastes, from Chult to Thay and Menzo Baranzan. It's finally here, the Forgotten Realms campaign setting. You can thank or blame our Patreon backers for making this episode happen. Oh, it's happening. It's happening right now. You can't stop it. We can't stop it.
This episode is also brought to you by Elderwood Academy. Elderwood Academy are artisans who craft amazing gaming products, including dice towers, dice trays, dice boxes, deck boxes, dice, and more.
All products are crafted to look like spellbooks, scroll cases, codices, and other awesome fantasy gear that we love.
So, Ishan, I was just checking out their website, and I noticed that they have expanded their line of Acquisitions, Inc. merchandise.
Isn't Acquisitions, Inc. a campaign that takes place in the Forgotten Realms?
It is, in its own weird way. A spinoff, if you will. Very fitting. But yeah, no, so they had the Employee's Manual, which is like the spell book, you know, like the little box that contains your, like, your mini and your dice and like a pen and like stuff like that. So they had that had wrapped around it, like the Acquisitions Inc. Employee Manual logo. Now you can get like the scroll rolling tray or the dice tower that have like the similar logo embossed in the leather. So I thought that was kind of cool because, you know, I don't have the spell box. I do have the scroll rolling tray. I love that. Like, you know, I like Acquisitions Inc. I think that would be a cool thing to have on there that isn't just like your usual kind of fantasy flames or dragon or whatever.
I mean, I'll tell you right now, it took me a while to realize that I don't want just one rolling tray. I don't want one particular item, one accoutrement to go with a game that I'm playing in. What I want is specific dice and a tray that I'm going to bring to play in our Dark Sun game. And then when we switch campaigns later to play in Eberron or to play in Forgotten Realms or whatever it is that we're doing, I want all the different stuff. I want a different mini. I want different dice. I want a different tray. I want a different logo on like the spell book thing that I'm bringing, you know?
You have officially reached the accessories tier of gaming. Welcome to the party.
That's the only way that people make money in this industry.
Right. So if that's interesting, you can check out the Acquisitions Inc. products and many more customized to your taste at elderwoodacademy.com/don't split.
All right. So here we are, tail end of March 2020, recording this episode. I hope that someday down the line when people, I don't know, discover the pod and are going through like back episodes, they listen to this little note and they're like, I don't really remember that. That's not really relevant anymore, but be safe out there with COVID-19.
Yeah, take it seriously. We're in New York, which is the epicenter. There are, what, over 100,000 cases now, 80,000 of which are in New York. Like, it's real. Like, stay home.
I mean, even by the time this episode is published, those numbers will be woefully inadequate to describe how many people are infected.
Yeah, it's really absurd. Like, do what you can. Stay home, stay safe, flatten the curve. It's not a joke. One of our listeners works for FEMA, is on the front line, like trying to help get supplies into the places where they need to be. And he's like, please, you have a platform for however many listeners you have, just tell them, take it seriously and be safe.
Yeah. And I know there's a lot of people on the Discord who are talking, like, I understand a lot of you have jobs or you're essential workers where you either can't stay home. We all really appreciate those of you who have to be out there, who are delivering things, healthcare workers. Again, just try to be as safe as possible. And if you do not have to be out there, please make everyone else who does have to be out there safer by staying home.
Yeah. And keep in mind, like, people are getting furloughed. People are losing their jobs. Like, not everybody is getting to be stable during this period. So if there's things you can do to help, look out for your friends and family, because we've got to get through this together.
Yeah. You can actually support your favorite creators. You know, local restaurants buy gift certificates. I know a lot of stores are doing, like, clothing stores are doing, like, sales. Like, we got to stay in business. You don't necessarily need those things delivered right now because you're not going anywhere, and also you don't want to put the delivery person at risk, but you can buy a gift certificate and just spend it later, you know? Mm-hmm. It's a nice little, like, interest-free loan you're giving to an organization or a business that you want to support.
Okay, speaking of social distancing, this is a terrible transition off of a very serious topic. We are playing in a live game, streaming yet again, our second foray into streaming.
Shane, I don't want to do another game where one of us is running a game and the other one is playing in it on a live stream.
Don't worry, we conned Aram into doing this.
Yes. So Aram, the GM of God's Fall and Rise of the Demigods, is going to be running Shane, me, and Sally from the Band of Blades stream that we ran through, I guess, a little, maybe four-ish session game. I don't really know exactly what we're doing, except that it turns out we're in Forgotten Realms.
Yeah, we're playing Castle Amber.
Oh, right. Yeah. That's exactly what we're doing.
Mm-hmm. And we are, I think our current incarnation is that we are the Goblinoid Workers Union, their labor attorney, a gnome assistant, and two bugbear bug bros who are going to break some skulls.
I'm very much looking forward to this. I think this is going to be the first party I've been in a long time where everybody's going to be speaking goblin.
Yeah, except you.
No. I speak goblin.
Oh, good. Because I speak gnomish. I'm not letting you get away with anything.
I only speak gnomish when I'm insulting you.
I remember.
But actually, that's what gnomish is, actually. It's just insults about bugbears.
Right.
You know, because gnomes can speak to small beasts. And I just assumed that bugbears are burrowing creatures.
And it sounds, by the name, bugbear seems small, doesn't it? It's bug, it's a bear, it's just a scale thing.
It's so confusing. I don't even understand. I was expecting a ladybug or something.
Right. So that'll be Friday, 8 p.m. Eastern on twitch.tv/godsfall for the next month, I think.
Yeah, starting tomorrow.
Yeah, literally tomorrow. So, Ishan, should we come clean?
I hope everyone has realized by now, yesterday's episode was a fake. It was fake.
April Fool's got him.
Injecting a little bit of levity into your quarantine time.
Yeah, you had no drive time shock jock DJ to pull one on you early in the morning. So instead, you got us.
Yeah, you know, I would have been more remiss to do it with people just sort of driving into work normally, because, you know, you download your podcast, you put it on, you're ready for your commute, and then it peters out 7 minutes into your drive.
Yeah. Well,
that would be quite a dick move. So anyway, hey, here's the real one.
Yeah, so in honor of the real one, I think I am required to open a beer.
Please
you
do.
You were feeling a little under the weather, so we're not going to do that.
You know, so long ago when we first said we were going to do a Forgotten Realms episode, I was like, oh my God, we're going to be like at your like dining room table drunk. Because how else would we do this episode?
Agreed. Now one of us is at my dining room table drunk.
And I mean, it is weird, but I think it will still be good. I expected that we would have, I don't know, mead or something in hand. Maybe Corona would be more fitting, but here we are.
All right. So for the rest of the episode, we're going to skip Gates of Morning, and we're also going to skip the Character Creation Forge. Those will be back next week.
So, Forgotten Realms.
Yeah, now, we read the wiki, so you don't have to.
Hey, and that's all we did. So the entire point of this series of episodes is to give you an overview of different campaign settings so that your group can decide if you want to play a game in that setting. I mean, I don't know that we really need to do that for this one, because I think every listener has played a game in the Forgotten Realms, even if they didn't intend to.
Yeah, if you've played 5th edition Dungeons & Dragons, it's very likely you accidentally played in Forgotten Realms.
If you played 4th edition Dungeons & Dragons, well, Points of Light and the Nentir Veil kind of got eaten by the Forgotten Realms, so, you know,
right.
You kind of de facto have also. All right, so what's the elevator pitch for the Forgotten Realms?
Hey, you ever played D&D? Like, you know, elves and dragons and fireballs and angry gods and giants and stuff? You ever hear of Baldur's Gate or Neverwinter Nights or
Yeah.
Elminster or Driss or Minsk or Volo or Xanathar?
I like some of them.
Yeah, that's Forgotten Realms. You're here.
You already live here. We're doing a campaign setting on like your apartment building.
Right. Exactly. It's the generic fantasy as required to make D&D work.
Right. It's the Bruce Springsteen song about small American towns of campaign settings.
So it's you, every Bruce Springsteen song.
You listen to and you go, oh, hey, I know that. That's familiar and comforting.
Oh, that's actually perfect. It's every Bruce Springsteen song except for the ones that are good. Those are Greyhawk.
All right. So let's talk a little bit about the history of Forgotten Realms. It began in the long, long ago, even before D&D, actually.
It did. Yeah.
Created by Ed Greenwood as the setting for his childhood writing back in the mid-60s.
And I would argue it hasn't changed a whole lot since then.
Much like Ed Greenwood. Seriously, go look at pictures of this guy. He definitely wants to be Gandalf.
Yeah, it's a thing. Okay, so in 1979, he began writing articles about the Forgotten Realms in Dragon magazine.
Skip ahead a few years, and in 1986, he sells the rights to TSR, which of course was then publishing Dungeons & Dragons, for Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 2nd Edition, and helps create the Forgotten Realms campaign setting box set.
So this is wild. He literally sold it for like a dollar to TSR.
Yeah, yeah.
But he retained enough of the rights for himself that like now he's set, and he still controls his characters. He still controls all of those elements of it. So he gets to write his Elminster novels whenever he wants and can veto anybody else using characters he doesn't want them to.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure his contract like actually stipulates that anything he says or writes is canon. Like, is canon. So, and cannot be contradicted. So he can put whatever he wants in a book. He can, like, give a talk at a convention, and that thing is true.
Mm-hmm. Yep. The joy houses were great. So in 1988, a couple years later, the first video game and the original Gold Box game, Pools of Radiance, was released.
I mean, do you even have a campaign setting if you don't have a video game?
I mean, in Forgotten Realms, I mean, this is why Forgotten Realms is so popular, right? Is
yeah.
Because they were early in video games, and every generation of video games had Forgotten Realms one, except the current one, because we don't talk about this.
Yeah, I mean, there are so many people, I think, who got into D&D because of the Forgotten Realms video games.
Right, right. Or the novels, right? Because the same year, 1988, R.A. Salvatore published the first Forgotten Realms novel, which was Crystal Shard. That had Drizzt in it for the first time, though he wasn't the main character. An interesting fact about that, again from the Wikipedia, which I read so you don't have to, Drizzt was a replacement character that TSR wouldn't let him use, presumably because Ed Greenwood wouldn't let him use it, that he made up on the spot as his managing editor was walking into a marketing meeting and needed a replacement.
You know, good job, Bob Salvatore, better known as the man who killed Chewbacca.
Okay. Still haven't let the EU go, huh?
Never. 1988, big year for all of us, really. Dungeons and Dragons, and also I think Kirk Cameron was basically the most popular person on television.
Okay.
Also in 88, Greenwood's first novel, Spellfire, and then also became an overpowered ability that the Chosen of Mistra have.
Right.
In 94, we get Elminster, The Making of a Mage, which gives us way too much information about Elminster's past.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's just go ahead and call that the last Forgotten Realms novel, because I don't want to talk about Elminster's nonsense anymore.
Ever again.
Yeah. There's like eight more novels.
Just about him.
There's three trilogies about Elminster. And that's pretty much all Ed Greenwood writes is Elminster.
I mean, that's what happens when you never die.
Right. So it then obviously continued on in third edition as a setting supplement. So there was another campaign setting book. And then in fourth edition, we got the Spell Plague.
Oh, the Spell Plague, which basically blew up the entire realms. We'll get into more detail then, but Shane, you didn't play 4th edition, right?
Correct.
So you never played a game where the Spell Plague like had happened?
Correct.
Okay. I have exactly one Spell Plague story
okay.
from a game. Okay. It's good that we talked about Drizzt a little bit, because like I have talked before, I was a 90s kid, sad and mopey, and Drizzt, at least back in the days, like sort of spoke to me. I cannot use that as an excuse, because the Spell Plague happened in like 2008. which is when my story is set. So in 2007, I started in a Forgotten Realms, a game set in the Forgotten Realms, with that a buddy of mine was running. And I am embarrassed to say I created a fighter who worshipped the god of death, and he used a scythe, because why wouldn't he do that? And he had like long dark hair, and he had like a snake familiar, and he was going to become a red dragon disciple, and he was from Thay, and like...
I'm cringing.
I know.
This is the sound of me cringing.
And my GM, who played a lot of D&D, like on active duty in Iraq, saw that backstory and was like, yes, I love this. And I was like, I know, me too. This is so good. And his name was Abel Seth, like Abel, the name of the first victim of murder.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
And Seth, the first syllable of Sephiroth?
maybe. All right. So we play that for a little while, and then that game totally falls apart because of fourth edition, because the GM hated the changes to Forgotten Realms, hated the spell plague. And so the spell plague blew up my game. In the same way that it blew up Halrua. Ooh, deep cuts.
Wow.
Okay, here's the thing, though. He tried to bring it back in 4th edition. He was like, fine, I really like this game. We're going to like reset it. We're going to fast forward 100 years, just like the realms. You're going to bring your characters back. You're going to get like reanimated or something. Like, tell me what happened. And I, being a munchkin, turned my fighter scythe wielder into a sword sage, and then turned him into an elf, because that's better than what the human that he was. It's better for sword sage. And then there was this, like, I don't know, mystical darkness that like spoke to him in the, like, while he was dead for 100 years, and then like remade him into an elf. And that character's new name, Kane, of course. Kane.
Oh, God. Jesus. How did I not see that coming?
So anyway, that lasted probably 3 sessions, and then that also fell apart. So
and
the
then
spell
mercifully
plague,
that fell apart.
The spell plague killed many, many things. And that's it. That's all I've played. I never played 4th edition Forgotten Realms again.
I didn't play 4th edition. I was kind of out of gaming at that point, and following it from afar, you know. And so, like, it blows my mind that people cared that much about the canon changing, that they couldn't just be like, hey, no, it's cool, we'll just set our game 100 years earlier, it doesn't matter.
Right. Yeah, like, I feel like so much of the outcry was from people who had been playing in a Forgotten Realms game for probably years, right? And now they're like, oh no, our whole world exploded, and how do we incorporate that? And I was just like, don't.
Yeah, it's fine. You could not.
Because also, I mean, we'll get into this later, but you're not incorporating all the canon stuff anyway. You can't, because then whatever your characters are doing doesn't matter.
Right, right. Okay, so continuing on with our real history.
Right,
of
sorry, yes, back to history.
We're now in 5th edition. This is the default setting of Dungeons & Dragons. There's no more spell plague. It got retconned. You can read the Sword Coast Adventures Guide if you really want to know why.
We did already do that, but I don't know. Don't bother. It doesn't matter. And here we are. And I'll say this. For what is considered the default setting for 5th edition, we haven't actually gotten all that much Forgotten Realms content. I mean, we've gotten a lot of adventures, right?
Yeah.
But I have no idea what, like, Cormyr really looks like.
Yeah, there's a lot of information about Waterdeep, Baldur's Gate, and the Sword Coast, and, like, Northern Faerun, but, like, that's it, really.
Yeah, there's a lot of information about, like, a 200-mile stretch of the beach.
Right.
All right, well, speaking of which, let's start talking about geography.
Okay, so the planet is called Toril. There's, like, I don't know, Toril Abir or whatever.
Abir, Toril, it just depends on which version you're talking about, whatever.
Who cares? The main continent that everybody cares about is called Faerun. The other stuff, whatever. Okay, so there is the continent of Karatur, which is basically East Asian exoticized fantasy written by white people for white people.
Shane, you gave this a racism index of 7. I think I would agree.
that is just bog standard racism. It checks all the boxes you expect and none of the ones you don't.
Lovely. Then there's the Endless Wastes. I think sometimes this is called the Horde Lands.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is also not a great name because, of course, they're steppe lands filled with barbarians on horseback. They're Mongols.
Mm-hmm.
They've got a Genghis Khan.
They got their own Genghis Khan.
Yeah. This is what? This is the White Scars from 40K, right?
Yeah, except like at least the White Scars are like literally the embodiment of Genghis Khan. Like, Khan is their leader. He is the like successor of the great Khan. At least there is like a direct connection between them of like a great warrior of history reborn as Primarch.
Oh, right. Because, 40K basically takes place 38,000 years in our future.
Exactly. Yeah. This one is like, we didn't have to do that, but we did.
Why not? All right. This gets a solid 7 too. I mean, yeah. This is to be expected.
Literally written by the same white guy.
Oh, wonderful.
Which, you know, I like... For its time, like, I don't know, like, you can kind of...
We'll get into that in a little bit.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think where we get real bad, and I don't know how this ever made it out, is Mazteca. Literally named as a portmanteau of Mayan plus Aztec, Mazteca.
Oh, because fuck the Incas, I guess.
Yeah. As somebody who you would think would appreciate a portmanteau, fuck this place. It is one of the very rare representations of pre-Columbian Mesoamerican culture in fantasy, which is like grossly underserved, except instead of serving it, the author decided to treat Faerunian adventurers as the conquistadors.
Yes. Oh, this must have been evil campaigns, right?
Nope. He himself said he always thought the conquistadors were the closest thing to a real-life D&D story. And this isn't like some secret that was buried to the sands of time that I uncovered just to be upset about. That is the quote from the marketing text that is on the box on the DMs Guild today. If you go look up Mazteca, you can download the PDF, and that is in the text describing it.
Yeah. It is unsurprising, sadly. Do you want to say this next part? Because Jesus.
Hey, look. The guy did a lot of research, okay? He went to the National Archive in Mexico, and he also went to such tourist destinations as Tulum and Chichen Itza in order to, quote, get it right. Which I assume he means get it right in writing off my vacation to Cancun.
Right. Hi. I'd like one admission to the National Archives of Mexico, please. I'd like to plan how to destroy your country again.
Exactly. This one is a full-on 10 for the racism index for me.
It's super terrible. Yeah, there are ways to incorporate pre-Columbian American societies in RPGs. This is not how to do it.
Yeah, I mean, it would be really cool to get a lot of that like actually well represented by people of that culture. Like, I would love to read that, but oh boy, turning that into the sandbox for your Faerunian conquistadors is just the wrong way to do it.
I mean, this isn't the only place this happens in Forgotten Realms. We'll talk about more of that later. But okay, I'm sure there are some listeners right now who are saying like, okay, that's not racism, right? That might just be misguided, but you know, at least they were attempting to be like representative or inclusive. And look, like, I get that, and I will say I don't think it's intentional, right? I don't think even people who went out to like write these settings were like, ah, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to make fun of racial minorities. Like that wasn't the intent, you know?
Right, right.
And you know, there was a time like when any representation was considered better than no representation. Like when I was little, there was a Hanna-Barbera cartoon called Hong Kong Phooey, where like a jive talking dog dressed up in like a karate gi and like karate chopped bad guys. And I watched that as a little Asian kid and was like, I love this. He's Asian and he's a good guy. And like, that is all that it took for me to be like, this is awesome. And now, God, it's so bad. Like, I'm not even going to sing like the little ditty that started before, because that is racist too.
Jesus.
No, but like, any representation is not better than, you know, just leaving it alone if you have no business dealing with something like this.
Yeah. Oh, man.
And like times change, right? Like the NAACP would not have named itself that were it created today, right?
Right. It would be Black Lives Matter.
Right. However, like to your point, this is something that you have said previously before, like about problematic books, all different types of problematic books. Like, yes, you know, you want to look at them in the spirit of their times and when they were created, but they still exist right now. Like you said, you can go look on the DM's Guild and go get it right now. And people can still buy them and read them and be influenced by them and think they're okay.
Right. Yeah. It's tough because like, that was actually one of the things that I took electives on in college, like specifically like Mesoamerican culture and pre-Columbian Mesoamerican as like part of Latin American history, right? And it's fascinating to me. And like, I understand some of the appeal of those kinds of stories and like that kind of mythology, like is different and is really interesting as an outsider. And like, I could see wanting to incorporate that into a game, but like, it's just not the right way to do it. You know, like that, it's very frustrating. It's one of those things where like you said, like it's difficult to even know what the harm is until years later. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's just better not to.
I mean, like, I totally agree with you. I would love to see like a setting based in those areas and in those times, or you know, even like inspired by them. Like I would murder a baby panda to get like a really good Journey to the West setting that I could play in that was like representative and like made by people who had any business making it in the first place, you know. But you know, all right, it is what it is.
Are you allowed to say murder a baby panda?
Yes. Look, okay.
Is that
you know the Chinese
way?
the Chinese communist government could just stop cutting down, you know, bamboo forests, which is actually what's happening, right? But but I'm here talking about killing one panda to actually get us a really good setting based on Chinese mythology, and I'm the bad guy? Okay, fine. Yeah.
All right, speaking of not really the bad guy, if I have to say one thing in Ed Greenwood's defense, he is very on record about hating all of these bolt-on regions, mm-hmm. Karator, Mystica, the Horde Lands. Like, all of this stuff came on sort of after his core concept. They were unknown continents that then got fleshed out by TSR. I don't know if that's because they were neighbor's toys in his sandbox or if it's because he thinks they're problematic, but he doesn't like them either. So you can play very canon Forgotten Realms if you would like and just ignore the problematic stuff.
Yeah, I think that's what we do.
Which we should probably do for the rest of this episode. Huh?
Done.
So, approved.
So then let's talk about different parts of Faerûn, because that's probably where you're going to be playing. In the west, there's the Sword Coast, which is 250 miles where all the action happens.
Uh-huh. It's the New York DC corridor.
Oh, it totally is. It's just an Amtrak.
It's from Boston to DC, that's it.
Right, it's Neverwinter, Waterdeep, Baldur's Gate from north to south. I always got confused about these cities, right? Because every time you have a story or a video game or whatever set in one of these cities, it's always talking about how like Neverwinter is the jewel of the north. Mm-hmm. Waterdeep is the city of splendor. It's like, okay, but which one's Boston and which one's New York? Be honest.
Yeah, exactly.
I guess neither. Neverwinter got not exploded. I mean, I guess it all died in 4th edition and now it's back.
Oh, it did. Oh, yeah, right. So, yeah. In the spell plague. Yeah. It also all died in the video game. There was that whole plague thing.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. The Wailing Death. Man, yeah. That was deep. That was intense.
Mm-hmm.
No, Fenthic, run. Don't trust death there.
And then, yeah, I think of the two, like, Neverwinter is the nice city. Waterdeep is the one run by the rich nobles, and Baldur's Gate is the horribly corrupt one.
Oh, yeah, totally. It's the one run by doppelgangers. Spoiler alert.
Okay. Then you have the Moonshae Isles, kind of off the coast.
Is this Elfland? Right. Evereska, right? Is that where it is? All the elves live on the islands. I mean, look, Ed Greenwood probably, I'm going to say, read The Lord of the Rings and looked at the map.
You think?
And put the ocean on the left side of the map and put some islands in that ocean and put some elves on that island. But then, you know, he expanded from there. Down a little lower, he put some gnomes. And then farther to the south, I think you get some of these in the Baldur's Gate games. There are the Lands of Intrigue, Om and Kalimshan. I actually hate the phrase Lands of Intrigue, because then you get sort of like the Arabian Nights street rat, shady dealings, market bazaar type feel that shouldn't always be paired with like market bazaars.
Right, but like that's Kalimshan, right? But like Om isn't that way at all. I went there in Baldur's Gate the first episode, or the first game. Like, it was just another fantasy city.
Like, I thought they were like, oh, you better not come into Om with your iron plague or whatever it was.
Oh, is that the second one?
There's Shadows of Om. I don't know if that means they're north of Om in the lee of a big stone. I have literally no idea. I'd never heard Baldur's Gate 2.
In all honesty, I'm the kid doing a book report who didn't read the book.
That's us. Look, this is basically a drunk history of Forgotten Realms. Okay? Exactly. And if you didn't realize that by now, shame on you. Next up is Chult. God damn it.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, so it's not its own continent, so it didn't get a racism index.
Right.
Chult, I guess, is fine. The jungles of Chult can go to hell forever.
Look, with these other places, we're like, these were written a long time ago, so like read it in that context, but like they're problematic now. Chult, we got a, what is it, Tomb of Annihilation? We got a Chult bulk like 2 years ago where it's market bazaars full of exotic flavors and brightly colored clothing, and there are jungles and bugs that will just kill you. Mm-hmm. Like, we don't need fantasy Africa where, again, the people who are actually protagonists and have agency are probably people from far away.
Yeah, and they have to go into the dark interior, right?
Right, like, at the very least, have the default be that you are from Chult.
Right.
That's what you do with every other setting.
Hang on, you wouldn't want all your white D&D players to have to play African-looking characters, okay?
I mean, but you... You might be right. God
damn it. If you do, if you don't.
All right. Then Central Faerûn is mainly the Dale Lands.
Yeah, literally no one important came from there. Just ignore them.
Yeah, nobody cares
about Elminster.
You're not going to find anybody who's knowledgeable or powerful or sagely in any way here in the Dale Lands.
Those haven't been built out since 1988. Nope.
No,
no sir. Then you have the nation of Cormyr.
Which is medieval France, right? Isn't it? That's where all the jousting happens.
Yeah, I think so. I think they have like that kind of the like knights errant sort of vibe to them.
Right, that's where the 5e purple dragon knight comes from.
Yeah,
or which no one ever plays, because why would you?
Because it turns out it's way easier to get expertise and persuasion elsewhere.
Right, and to be any other paladin subclass.
Oh, it's a fighter, my guy.
Oh my god, it totally is. It totally is. God, it is bad for a fighter. Sorry, it's Order of the Crown that I'm thinking of.
Yep.
Yeah. Then there are the Border Kingdoms, which are, what are they on the border of?
They're on the border of like the Chult. Map. They're on the border of like Chult and like whatever. It doesn't matter. They're just down there in the south. But like they're that place. Like in every fantasy setting has this. And like the nonsense fantasy settings that I create to run games also always have this idea of like, it's the area where like the borders are constantly shifting and changing. Like political alliances are extremely ephemeral. And like, you know, like any one group starts to get too powerful and everybody gangs up on them to beat them back down to oblivion. So like, it's just like, there's a circle and like the pieces of the pies get divided up differently every few years, but like, you never really know where you land.
Great.
Which is usually like, cool, set your game here. Like, you could do whatever you want with the political intrigue. Just learn who the players are. Not in Forgotten Realms.
No. Every takeover and coup is time-stamped.
Yeah, exactly. There is no room for improvisation there. Don't even try it. Just stay out.
And then we have the East. We have Rashomon, which is, I guess, kind of Russia. It's run by a cabal of masked witches. You may have heard of it because this is where Minsk comes from.
It's the only reason you've heard of it is because Minsk is from there.
Is it weird that the character named Minsk is from Pseudo-Russia?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, there are a lot of names out there that you can pick.
I know, but okay, this is the Bon Jovi problem, right? It's just too good of a name not to give it to him.
it got referenced in, it got name dropped in... an American tale, right? The Great Mouse of Minsk.
Is that true?
It totally is. Oh, yeah. Oh, so you need to go back and watch An American Tale and An American Tale 2, Fievel Goes West.
I know Fievel Goes West.
He was going west to Rashomon.
Oh. Okay. Checks out. All right. Then we have the Horde Lands, the aforementioned Horde Lands in which the Genghis Khan equivalent is running around with his horseback barbarians conquering.
Yeah. I mean, I can't tell any of them apart individually, so they just look like a horde.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
They also don't have individual goals or dreams or agendas or anything like that. They're,
right. Well, I mean, there aren't women there, so.
Right. Mooks for the slaughter.
Next up is Thay, which is magical assholes. Mm-hmm. The Red Wizards of Thay.
Yep. They're your ready off the shelf stock villain. They're usually like Randian business evil, you know?
Yeah.
It's like they do bad stuff because they get money for it. But sometimes they're more like cackling evil of like, we do bad stuff because we can. And also we're rich
and we're run by a lich, but you don't know that, but you kind of know that, don't you?
I'll let slip. I have to kill you.
I will say this about the Red Wizards. Like you're right. They're actually a pretty useful, like antagonist that you can just pull out of your pocket ready made, and like they already have goals because like, hey, we're the Red Wizards, of course we're the bad guys, you know?
Yeah, like they introduce themselves that way, right? Like, hey, kill me.
Well, that's the thing, like that one thing that always bothered me about them, but probably now bothers me less, is I was always like, why would you let Red Wizards into your country? Everybody knows they're evil. It's like on their shirts, they're like, we're Red Wizards, we're evil, we're going to screw you and try to take over your country with bad magic, right?
Right.
But then I was like, well, I mean, people let Coca-Cola come into their country and start a factory.
Hey, at least Coca-Cola creates clean water.
I don't think sometimes
the Red Wizards of the Fae aren't using a lot of like purify water and food.
All right, how about BlackRock? Okay. They show up and you're like, well, I know I've heard you do bad things far away, but here I'm getting money right now. So sure, set up shop. I don't care. Sell some potions, whatever.
What do you think BlackRock does?
Basically sells potions.
Okay. Mutual funds, potions. What's the difference?
What? Basically, why are you allowed to have a charter? Oh, it's because the Red Wizards own a country.
That's right. And then also in the east, we have the Shining Lands, which are Africa and India sort of rolled into one.
You know, into one. Because they're basically the same.
Yeah, you know, they're on that far side of the map. Why,
right.
why give them any attention?
Japan and China and put them together too and call it Legend of the Five Rings.
I mean, or Karator.
Hey, so did it seem like there are a lot of matriarchal societies in the Shining Lands to you? Mm-hmm, like, I think Halrua is run by women. There's another one that's like Evil Drow, and that's run by women, but like, of course it is because it's Drow. Why do matriarchal societies always have to be evil? I think this one gets like a solid 8 on the racism index, but the sexism index, this one tops it at 10.
I mean, we almost couldn't even talk about the sexism index because,
oh my god,
the female representation, not so much in the campaign setting itself over the years, but oh my god, and some of the novels and things are just bad.
I mean, we're not going to Bechdel test any of them because... It's
how could you?
Pointless, right?
Most of them don't have enough names to have spoken lines.
I mean, in the Drist novels, like there's Caddy Bree. She's the love interest for at least two of the protagonists because there's no other woman. And she can't date Brunar because she's his daughter.
All right, and then underneath all of this mess on the surface of Faerûn is the Underdark, which is basically Hollow Earth. You've got a series of caves and caverns connecting underground through all of these passages to large cities of all the, you know, underdwelling races.
Yeah, this is like Journey to the Center of the Earth type caves, you know, like 2,000-3,000-foot caves that somehow the ceiling is staying in place without necessarily magic.
Right. Well, the thing is, only the Red Wizards, if they have mineral rights, so there's no risk of them falling down because they're not interested in drilling.
All right. So here you'll get basically like settings in and of themselves. Giant cities like Menzoberranzan, which is where Drist came from in the first place. And I think I don't know, the vast majority of like some of the early Drizzt books take place. And, you know, Bob Salvatore spent a lot of time really delineating exactly how drow society works. And it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, that's the big drow city. Then there's like Blingdenstone, which is the Svirfneblin city. And
yeah, actually,
Gontalgrim, the dwarven city.
Yeah, I like that. I like Blingdenstone. It seems to be a place that like makes sense, right? Like, it is just martial enough that you understand how they're not getting overrun, and just commercial enough that you understand how they make a living, you know, and they're not stabbing their second cousin every third week, and so you understand how it's still populated.
Right. But your Underdark is going to give you your Beholders, your Illithid, your Kuotoa, your Drow, your Svirfneblin, your Dwargar, you know, all the usual suspects of staying out of the sunlight.
Yeah, all your gray races.
Yeah, right.
I can't imagine any of them taste good. I mean, like, unless you're an Illithid. All your gross races, too. They always put them down here.
Right, yeah. Of course. Why wouldn't you? Who wants to see those in broad daylight?
That's right. That's where Char put them.
All right. Do we want to talk a little bit about religion in Forgotten Realms?
I mean, it doesn't have any effect on the campaign setting itself.
Right.
Okay.
In a way, you're right, because other than the occasional cult that gets too big for its britches, like, the gods do what they do. I don't seem to understand how people have any impact on this, other than the clerics being, like, literally all over the place everywhere in the world.
I mean, so we have this big complaint that, like, there are these massively powered NPCs running all over the place who can fix any problem or whatever. But the gods also, like, just directly intervene. This isn't one of those settings where the gods are distant and you have to pray to them and you're just not sure if they exist. They exist. Sometimes they show up and start walking around.
Yeah, like Mistra, the goddess of retcons.
You know, and sometimes you have powerful adventurers who end up becoming a god. So, I don't know, maybe that's what keeps them in line. I don't understand why all the gods aren't murdering everyone who hits level, like, 14.
Yeah, I mean, there should be a hard cap, right?
Like Evil Overlord List 101, right? Don't let any plucky adventurers get too powerful. You know that, like, Apotheosis requires level 20 because that's when the campaign is ending, okay? Right. Kill them at least at 19.
Nip those in the bud.
Right.
Forgotten Realms does have the Raven Queen, which is the one goddess who is actually kind of cool around here.
Yeah, she showed up in 4th edition in Points of Light and then got reabsorbed. And I think she got retconned as one of those mortals who, dated and then killed Nerul, I think is what she did.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the usual way that you attend godhood, not through worship.
Right.
That's for losers.
But there are all the usual D&D gods here, because I think before there was an official Dungeons and Dragons pantheon, it was just the Forgotten Realms pantheon. We were just using Ed Greenwood's gods.
Well, I mean, there was also Greyhawk, right? And so much of that was, like, kind of, I mean, even so, a lot of Forgotten Realms feels like ripped off from real world religion too.
I mean, Greyhawk, yes, definitely. And then, like, Greyhawk and Forgotten Realms deities feel a lot like Greek and Roman gods, where you're like, oh yeah, that's just a different name, huh?
Right. They're different names for the same domains,
right? Like the same personalities often too.
Yeah, right. Like, yeah. You're Grumsh and your Coralon. Like, tell me the difference between them.
Oh, well, Grumsh has one eye.
No. The difference between Grumsh and Coralon in either setting.
The god of the orcs only got one eye. All right. So let's talk a bit about the long and tortured history of the Forgotten Realms in-game. Okay. I don't understand how anybody lives here. It must be like living in Marvel or DC, where you're just like, oh, I guess the city's getting destroyed again today.
Well, I mean, they're thousands of years apart. The only people who could notice are the elves.
Well, and then, like, one generation of elves. The latest generation of elves is like, everything sucks.
Oh, yeah, no, that's true. If you're the last generation of elves that had, like, the Spell Plague, the Second Sundering, and the Time of Troubles all within 200 years, like... What do we do? Okay, so let's go back to the original. We talked about this a little bit in our April Fool's joke episode, but, like, the setting starts with the Overgod Eo creates two sister goddesses.
And what do those two sisters do once they exist?
They fight.
Yeah, they fight with each other. Because
one's good, one's evil, you know, as you do.
Yeah. I don't think they had like human forms at the time, but you'd be like, oh, it's Betty and Veronica. Jesus. All right, fine.
Anyway, like in the midst of their fighting and quarreling, they accidentally kind of create the world of Toril and Abir or whatever. It doesn't really matter. They also create like they seed all of the gods or more, most of them, I guess. Mm-hmm. Some of them ascend from mortality, but like, you know, notably Mistral, who is the goddess of magic, who creates the weave, which creates magic for everybody. And that's what creates this fantasy world.
And then the world was just kind of, you know, chugging along, doing its thing until about 30,000 years later. Is that it? Yeah.
Yes.
Jesus. All right. I mean, Eberron's like 1 million years later. Sorry. Yeah,
it's comically long from like a telling a story sense, and it's also comically short from like a geology sense.
Yes, right. Like, geologic time is like a different thing. Right. All right, so fine. 30,000 years later, the world looks much like it does currently in that it's like pseudo-medieval, but technology is very high because people have like harnessed magic in order to create like flying cities and like the Netherese or like a cabal of human mages in a society built entirely on magic, and all of their cities float and they're like in command of the world and they're so powerful that they've created epic spells.
Yeah, there's the Netheril Empire, right? Is like the thing. And like I remember this getting referenced in Neverwinter Nights 2 as like the Netheril did this and whatever their leftovers are sort of right. Like what's being coped with. But this all comes down to, yeah, like they're trying to create epic level spells, and the Archwizard Karsus does a 12th level spell, which is apparently one level too high.
And
whoops, it broke. Like, you can't turn it up to 11, dude. Like,
duh. Come on. The dial doesn't go to 12. So he creates a spell, Karsus's Avatar, which he should have known doesn't work because there are far too many like possessives and apostrophes in there. Like, right. Come on, Karsus's? No, yeah. No.
Branding. Simple branding.
What a terrible name.
Exactly.
The only thing that spell did is kill the goddess of magic and replace her with him. Because he wanted to ascend to godhood. This is how he's going to do it. And hey, guess what? It totally worked.
It totally worked, yeah. Except it didn't because it broke magic.
Yeah. He was able to hold on to it for like one round.
Uh-huh.
And then all magic, I think, ended. Like, it was basically an EMP that turned off all magic. And hey, guess what? Was holding up all those flying cities.
Yeah. Yep.
So All of the cities come crashing to the ground.
However, knowing that, you know, or at least seeing one way out of this problem, Mistral sacrifices herself in order to, like, save magic, and in the process is reborn as the goddess Mistra, which I assume was a typo at some point that had to be canonized in a retcon, because how dumb is that, honestly?
You know, she has proclivities. She likes a name, okay? I had it for 30,000 years. I'm going to switch things up just a little bit. You know, I'm now Karen with a Y, not Karen with an E, okay? I got a fresh new look. I got some summer bangs.
Yeah, exactly. And I am on Tinder. All right, so 1,500 years later, you know, more Forgotten Realms stuff until we come to the Time of Troubles, which is perpetuated or initiated by two deities, Bane and Myrkal, who decide to steal the Tablets of Fate from Ao. And Ao wrecks the world because of that.
Man, he was just like, you know what? I know there's a lot of mortals, but I don't care. I'm going to punish all my kids, little deity children. And how do I do that? What's the worst thing you can do to a god?
Make them mortal.
Yeah. I mean, super powerful mortals. This is just Thor, right?
Right.
Which came first? I don't know.
So all of the gods become mortal, and he basically says, this is how it's going to work until one of you returns my tablets, you stupid kids.
Yeah.
And he keeps Helm as the single god still with deific power in order to guard heaven.
And in the meantime, all of these now mortal gods are running around as basically epic level adventurers. I think some of them are also really tall. I think I remember something about Garl Glittergold, the gnome god, being like, you know, normal person height. So the Time of Troubles is like the first time that the realms gets like a huge change in the story to match a new rule set of the Dungeons and Dragons game.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, this sets a precedent, right? Like, I think before, like, the conceit was that Forgotten Realms is like, this is D&D's game. This is D&D's campaign setting. So it's kind of like Order of the Stick, where everyone who was in Forgotten Realms had to be able to like stat them out in some way, you know, like,
right.
Gods had stats. Elminster had like, you know, canonical, like a stat block. I think he was, I don't know, like a quadruple multiclass epic spellcaster.
Right, right.
So when D&D switched to second edition, I guess the thought was, all right, magic works totally different now. We have different rules for spellcasters. We have different rules for all different kinds of classes. How do we actually reflect this? Because now every spellcaster is going to be operating differently. And when we tell the fiction in like novels, we have to talk differently about the mechanics of how this is all working. I guess we need to really shift things up so that there's an explanation for why the stories are different.
Yeah, this was like a way of fixing the fact that they had started writing Forgotten Realms stuff in Dragon before publishing the campaign setting, mm-hmm. right? So it was like, hey, buy this box. It's different from the stuff you already read.
All right, so eventually the tablets get given back. I believe due to the questing by an adventuring party.
Oh, well, I mean, hold on. You've missed the whole part where Mistra tries to fight Helm to fight her way back into heaven, and then Helm like smacks her down the celestial stairway, and she lands at the bottom landing with a big magical explosion, and that kind of ruins everything. And then
I guess she wasn't all that mortal. She exploded in magic.
Yeah. So then some, you know, adventuring party comes along and tries to resurrect her, and then the wizard becomes Mistra.
I mean, when you read that the woman in the party was named Midnight, and the goddess of magic was dead, I think people should have been like, well, I guess we know who's going to be the new goddess of magic. The names are just a little too similar.
Exactly. All right. So this is all good through third edition. And then come fourth edition, 30 years later in the story, we have the Spell Plague set about because Shar, remember her, sister of Saloon, has the god Sirik stab Mistra, the goddess of magic, and kill her.
Because why not?
Yeah. And unlike every other time she's been killed, which is many, she doesn't get resurrected. And so magic is broken forever. And voila, fourth edition casting becomes like the new standard of magic.
Right. And the entire realms are sort of like scrubbed with steel wool in that, you know, some places are moved around and like Mazdika shows up. And I think, I believe in Halrua, every magic item and spell scroll all activates at the exact same time, and then the entire country just explodes. So if your game was set in Halrua, you probably didn't enjoy that very much.
Yeah, you know, Elminster loses all of his powers. Like, Toril and Abir are split. Like, Elementals and Primordials go to one, and everybody else goes to the other.
Elementals and Primordials lying together. It's chaos. It's bedlam.
The world tree now becomes the world axis, which I never understood how there was so much griping about a changing of a cosmology chart, but here we are.
Because now it goes in a circle instead of going up like branches. Mm-hmm. I have a chart in my room, in my bedroom, in the inside of the closet.
Yeah, when you
next
when you
to
come
my robe.
First you came for my NPCs, and then you came for my wall art.
I hand lettered it. Right. Everybody hated this. Everyone hated this.
Yep. In the world and out of the world.
I mean, that's the end. Everyone who cared about this hated it. Right. Many people did not care.
Yes. But many loud people hated it. So when 5th edition came around, the Spell Plague was effectively retconned by Wizards of the Coast. They advanced the story 100 years, and it turns out Mistra wasn't killed by Sirik. She was literally just taking a vacation. She's back now. She fixes magic. Things go back to the way they were, more or less, 130 years ago.
I mean, divination is a spell. She should be able to cast it. She should be doing it every day. Am I going to get killed today?
Well, that's why she took a vacation, right? That's my point. Like, the thing is, she didn't set her out of office, and look what happens.
I know. Your emails just keep piling up and piling up. All those prayers.
So, here we are. This is Forgotten Realms now. Congratulations.
All right, and that's where we are right now, basically where we were in third edition.
Right.
So let's talk about some themes that you might encounter in a Forgotten Realms game, which is literally anything.
Yeah, it's a kitchen sink. It is designed as a kitchen sink. It was built as a kitchen sink. It will always be a kitchen sink. If it exists, there's a place for it in Forgotten Realms. Not necessarily like a good or intentional or thoughtful place for it, but God knows there's a place for it.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, if something new is introduced to D&D, it will be shoehorned into Forgotten Realms in some manner. Like, Dragonborn were shoved in 4th edition because now they're a PHB race, and then in 5th edition, they're, like, pulled way back, but they still exist. They're in there. There's, like, I don't know, some tiny country full of Dragonborn somewhere far, far away.
Yeah, don't ask. It's fine.
Right. But, like, it doesn't necessarily mesh well together, so you can get into like conflicting views of what the realms look like. I mean, this is one of the main reasons that Eberron exists in the first place is, you know, Wizards was looking for a campaign setting where everything that exists in D&D actually has a place where it fits in the story.
Mm-hmm. Another big theme here is that there is just lots of lore. If you want a setting in which you can have any question more or less answered by the canon itself, this is a great place for it because God knows Ed Greenwood has written a lot.
Yeah. If you want to be the GM who gets a question about, you know, what is the name of the baker on this particular street in this particular city, and you want to be able to go look it up somewhere so that you know the right answer, Forgotten Realms is for you.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to be the person who says a random shop's name off the top of your head and, you know, wants your players to just be fine with that and not go look it up and prove you wrong. I don't know if Forgotten Realms is necessarily the one you want to be playing in, at least in terms of like a canon Forgotten Realms game.
I think that kind of brings us to the next theme, which is Angry Grogs. Most Forgotten Realm games don't care about any of this, right? Like, most Forgotten Realms games are just taking advantage of a very narrow area and a very like generic fantasy that everybody recognizes the tropes of.
Yeah, most Forgotten Realms games don't even advertise that they're in the Forgotten Realms. They take place in a town that happens to be in a country. And if someone asks me, oh, what's like 200 miles to the west, I can go look at a map. Yay.
Right. But that community is still there. And they're loud and diligent, unfortunately. So it can be one of those things where when you say Forgotten Realms, like there's broad expectation about what that might mean. You know, mm-hmm. like you mentioned, we're playing in a Forgotten Realms game tomorrow that we didn't even necessarily realize was set in Forgotten Realms. Like, we just know it was an old campaign module and we're playing it. But yeah, if you say that to somebody else, like, hey, we're playing this game in Forgotten Realms, like that's going to mean certain things to them. And like those expectations are way broad on a spectrum, you know,
yeah.
So you just have to be careful about what you're setting up.
I think there are a couple of ways that this can actually be a good thing. Like, we've seen, even just on the Discord, people have asked questions like, hey, I'm in a group, and one of the people is really, really, really into the lore and really likes to correct people when they get the lore wrong, even the GM. You know, yeah. And of course, this is an above-the-table problem. You know, this is something that can be handled maybe delicately, but it's something that I think is going to start coming up more and more when... One, people are quarantined, you're playing a lot of online games, and you don't necessarily like know the person that you're going to be gaming with, right? Also, you don't necessarily know who is like a Forgotten Realms lore geek who knows all of this stuff, right? Because it doesn't come up until you're playing in a Forgotten Realms game. And suddenly you're like, oh, yeah, I know all about this. In fact, I've played through this old module, or like I know what is underneath the Yawning Portal, and that's not a surprise to me because mm-hmm. like I've been through this, and like I've read every single thing about the Forgotten Realms, and that means that I know everything. I probably know more than the GM.
Yeah, there's 40 years of history here that like is prone to lots of recycling.
Yeah. Now, if you are a person who loves the realms, and there are many reasons to love the realms, if you're in a game with someone who doesn't know it as well as you, I think this is a really nice opportunity to be a resource for other people rather than someone who's correcting them. Like, it's like being a rules lawyer. You know, if you know the system so much better than everyone else, you can, if asked, offer either your opinion or what you know about it, or like suggest the name, or like, I would love to have a player like sort of sitting right there at the table where someone's like, oh, what's the shopkeeper's name, you know, or the merchant's guild in this town. And I can look at them and be like, what is it? And then they can spout it off and be like, there you go. That's great. I don't have to go look anything up.
Right.
You know, they feel useful. It's taken like a burden off of me from having to fix things. People at the table like feel appreciative. These are all things you can do. Grognards out there, put that information to use by just suggesting that you can be a resource, not a foil.
Okay, so let's talk about the races of the Forgotten Realms.
Let's talk about Drow.
Yeah, so there's one true race, Drow.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone else is lesser than Drow.
I mean, female Drow. Female Drow.
Well, right. So you're right. Okay. So yeah, in order, okay, there are female Drow, male Drow, and everybody else.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And none of the everybody else matters at all. Don't even worry about it.
Done. We're good. That was easy. Ah, Forgotten Realms.
No, there's literally every race somewhere. Some in more problematic places than others. But yeah, if you want it, you can find it somewhere in Forgotten Realms. It means every bonkers homebrew and every unearthed arcana and every little nonsense thing you could possibly be looking for and find in any sort of supplement book from any edition, it's got some place in Forgotten Realms.
Yeah, if you're walking down the street in Waterdeep, yes, the alleyway has a group of Kenku rogues. Why would it not? And there's probably a Dragonborn ambassador somewhere. And you know what? That's probably an Asimar. That's why that person is so hot.
Who is that climbing the rigging of that ship in the harbor? Is that a Hidozi?
Oh, wow. Look at that. Huh.
Huh.
You know what? There's a large community of Hidozi, I hear, down at the docks.
Uh-huh.
And you know what? This can be great, actually, because I think one of the sort of like pushbacks that some GMs or some groups have against some of the more uncommon races is that you're just like, how does this even make sense? Like, why is this hobgoblin in this tiny thorp? And why hasn't everyone like run them out of town or stabbed them in the night, right? But in Forgotten Realms, you can be in Waterdeep. You can be in Baldur's Gate or Neverwinter or whatever, and no one will bat an eye at these things.
Right, right.
You can be a red wizard. Hi, poison potions for sale.
Exactly.
These will kill your mom.
Poison the firstborn. Or your parents. Engineer your own exit. All right, let's talk about some notable NPCs. And I say notable in a very air quotes kind of way.
There's Elminster. He's the Sage of Shadowdale. Is that
something
it?
Something like that, yeah.
He is the author insert. He is the Gary Stu, who is the best at casting magic and the best at fighting. And he's like really old, but he doesn't look old because he's like perpetually young and he's super smart. And how many incarnations of the Goddess of Magic has he slept with?
All of them?
I think all of them. You're absolutely right.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty sure. I mean, okay, like all that really needs to be said about Elminster is that like Ed Greenwood shows up to conventions cosplaying his own character. So come on. All right, let's talk about some more interesting characters, like Halaster.
I like Halaster because he's Halaster insane.
Black Cloak, is that right?
Or is that Kelbin? It's Kelbin Black Staff. I think it's Halaster Black Cloak. I believe so. Because, you know, I guess wizards are in the 90s.
Yeah, exactly.
So Halaster's the Mad Mage. He's a crazy person who created Undermountain, which is an ever-changing maze underneath Waterdeep. And technically underneath the Yawning Portal Inn in Waterdeep, that he just fills with monsters that he teleports from other places. That he fills with monsters that he kidnaps from other places.
Yeah, teleport is a nice way of saying traffics.
Right. You live here now. And he does it kind of as a test for adventurers, kind of just to like satisfy his whims, because when you're an epic level spellcaster, what are you going to do? You can't kill the Goddess of Magic and replace her. Everyone knows that's not allowed.
Right.
So, I don't know, I guess you're going to, like, make dungeons. But, you know, at least there's a canonical reason that there are crazy dungeons in Forgotten Realms.
Right. And then there is Lariel Silverhand, who graces the name of the latest D&D product.
Oh, yeah, the dice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she's one of the seven sisters. I think she was a chosen. I think she's one of the ones who's still alive. I think the symbol's dead. There was a character named The Symbol. Oh. I think she's dead.
Cool. Good to know.
Cool. So then there are other characters who are not like amazingly epically powerful. There are people like Durkan or even Driss DeWerden and his companions like Brunner Battlehammer, his enemy Artemis and Treri. Like these are mortals who are like very powerful and very skilled. I prefer dealing with these NPCs in a game, either as a GM or as a player, because they're at least on a level where you can potentially deal with them, or like you might have something that they want, or like you can actually do something for them and they can't solve the problems, right? Like if you're in a war with Drizzt and he's on your side, he can't just solve this war by himself.
Well, not with that attitude.
You know, one tiny dex-based cut at a time.
Yeah. One figurine of wondrous power at a time.
Literally, just the one. He has the one.
Exactly. And once per day at that.
Bob Salvatore, better known as the creator of Guinevere.
Yeah, exactly. And her human pet. Okay, so let's move on into some plot hooks. I don't think we need to beat these to death. Obviously, these are all playable in Dungeons & Dragons 5th edition. So yeah, let's just go through these.
Okay, we've made these up ourselves. Tiamat, let's just say, is trapped in hell and the dragons are trying to find a way to help her escape.
Let's say there are four cults of each of the princes of the elemental evil, which are causing disasters across Faerûn. Can the heroes figure out why they're doing it and stop them?
I think four was a good choice. Four is a good number for cults.
Yeah, you know, yeah. Elements.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What if the heroes are taken prisoner in the Underdark, and while they attempt to escape, they realize that demons are plotting to take over the world from below?
I like that one.
Mm-hmm.
What if there is a storm giant who holds the rest of the giants at bay, but he has gone missing?
Oh no, the Storm King.
Uh-oh. Ishan? What if a bard gives you a tip on a massive dragon horde hidden in the city of Waterdeep? Will your adventurers find it?
Wait, I have an idea. What if, once they find that horde, they discover an entrance to a giant dungeon underneath Waterdeep, constructed by a crazy wizard? Do you think they would go in and steal their stuff?
Which crazy wizard?
I don't know. Let's just say Halaster, right?
He's there. We might as well use him.
Let's just pull him in, right? He's there.
All right. What if... okay, so hear me out.
Okay.
The city of Baldur's Gate, normally pretty corrupt, right?
Totally.
What if things get worse?
Oh my god.
And then the heroes descend into the Nine Hells and
Whoa.
Put an end to it.
The Nine Hells?
Yeah. Well, at least the first hell.
Do they have to climb
one of the Nine Hells. Yeah.
Do they have to climb down the World Tree to get there?
Hey, look. I don't write the rules, okay? It's just a plot hook. You do what you do in your game.
In my game, we play Nebron.
Well, that brings us to a good conclusion. We always ask the question, would you play Forgotten Realms?
All right, so Shane, would you play a game set in the Forgotten Realms?
Yeah, duh, obviously. I mean, I can make fun of Forgotten Realms, but like, I'm never going to turn it down because like, it's the vanilla to me, you know? Like, all the things I hate about it, I'm going to hate regardless, and all the things I like about it are fine, basic fantasy tropes that keep the game going in an easily translatable D&D way.
Yeah, we're all on the same page when we're playing Forgotten Realms, right? Like, we all know what to expect.
Right, and I don't play with people who are super groggy about anything, frankly. So I'm not going to be exposed to that kind of issue, even though it is probably slightly more prevalent with Forgotten Realms fans than it is in other settings.
Look, I'm such a grognar that I don't even use D10s, okay?
Yeah.
Those aren't platonic solids.
Uh-huh.
Get them out of here. yeah, I mean, What choice do you have? If you are an avid D&D gamer, you're going to end up playing in the Forgotten Realms because someone is going to set a game that you're in there and like just roll with it. Great. You know, why not? Plus, like, I have so many good memories of one playing in games that were set in the Forgotten Realms, and it wasn't because they were in the realms, but they happened to be. And also, like, I played a lot of Neverwinter Nights and a lot of Baldur's Gate and a lot of Icewind Dale. And, you know, that... It, at times when I couldn't get a gaming group together before like internet gaming was really like a huge thing, those were really great to get my gaming fix and my lore fix and you know, just to like stay connected to the community.
Yeah. No, I like, there's that weird thing where like, it's tropey now, right? But for a long time, Forgotten Realms was developing these tropes mm-hmm. that became super useful shorthand, right? In a way that I wouldn't necessarily jump right into a Greyhawk game, because Greyhawk has like a lot of baggage to it, you know, and like doesn't have all necessarily those baseline assumptions that we have in fifth edition. Even though I've played Greyhawk and loved that too. So, you know, like Forgotten Realms is an easy place to land if you don't have another place in mind and you don't want to go through the work of building it yourself. Like, it has a lot of resources available. Every D&D product in your current edition is going to fit Forgotten Realms. Like, mm-hmm. it has a lot of charm to it. You know, and like whether or not you can enjoy playing in it doesn't mean it's good or bad, right? Like, it doesn't say anything about you to enjoy Forgotten Realms or not enjoy Forgotten Realms either.
Yeah, watch us play tomorrow.
So I guess that's a resounding, sure, why not?
Yeah, okay. I'm playing a Drow Ranger, though.
I mean, you'd be foolish not to.
They're so OP.
Yeah, exactly. You can't go out in sunlight and you can't do anything as a ranger, so perfect. We showed those Drizzt fanboys for sure.
Man. Do I start with a figurine of wondrous power?
You might as well start. All right. I can hear Podcat in the background, which means I have to ask you, Shin. Do you hear it?
I do. Wow. At first I thought it was a baby, but I know that you don't have a baby. I mean, unless you've like inherited a plague baby.
I have no plague baby.
Okay.
So normally that would mean it's time to move on to the Character Creation Forge. But since we're skipping the Character Creation Forge, let's just tell our listeners how to get in contact with us.
We do love hearing from you.
You can tweet at Shane at Mundangerous. That's M-U-N dangerous.
Just roll with it. And you can tweet at Ishan at Evil Sans Carne. That's malice minus meat.
And you can tweet at the show at TPTcast.
You can also email us at TotalPartyThrill@gmail.com.
You can find us on the web at www.TotalPartyThrill.com.
We're also on Facebook and Instagram at TotalPartyThrill.
And join the conversation on Discord. There's a link in the show notes. All right, so before we wrap this up, we want to take one more moment and blame our Patreon supporters.
This is all your fault. You made us do this, and we appreciate it so much.
We did this episode as promised when we hit $300 a month on the Patreon. We appreciate that support so much. It took a huge drive of momentum from our Discord, from our Twitter, from new listeners and old listeners alike banding together to make this happen. It's kind of ridiculous that you did it, in all honesty. But
yeah, just to spite us.
Yeah, exactly.
Also, this was the thing we thought we would never hit. So we were like, fine, we'll do Forgotten Realms when we hit $300, whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Like, who would do this? So it's an amazing milestone for us. It's very heartwarming for me personally. So I really appreciate all the support over the past 5 years.
Yeah, wow, it has been that long.
Yeah,
man.
So we're here.
Still here. And if you're waiting on some Patreon rewards, those are coming. Just got to figure out how to, you know, get to the post office.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. slight plague delay.
Yeah.
So if you want to learn more about Patreon, you can check out our rewards at patreon.com/TotalPartyThrill.
We are barreling along to the next reward, which I believe, Shane... involves your mom.
It's D&D with my mom. I think we're going to put a reward in at 350. We haven't quite figured out what
it's
going to
be. Yeah, we'll see what it is. Is it going to be a Forgotten Realms game that she plays in?
I mean, I don't see how it would be anything else. It's all the basics.
It's all she knows. It's her favorite setting.
It's her favorite setting, yeah. It might have to be Game of Thrones, so she'll understand it.
Oh, God. All right, fine.
All right, so what do we have planned for next week's episode?
Well, you know, it is the time of pandemic, so we are talking about playing during this pandemic.
And in the Character Creation Forge?
We are building the Nosomatic Chirurgeon.
Well, that's it for episode 244 of Total Party Thrill. I hope we lived up to our name, but either way, I'm Shane.
And I'm Ishan. Thanks for listening.
Leave behind the safety of the Humberwood and travel down the Tarngrip coast to the Bay of Baloosh, home to both the Kingdom of Den and the Serpent Domain. but neither hold the true power of the bay, for that lies in the sea itself and the pirate lords that call her tides their own. The dread pirate Captain Bluebeak, Tiberius Fang, Kin the Bladeless, and Gabrielle LaFleur, the self-proclaimed pirate queen. Each one vying for power over the very tides themselves. But do any of them really have what it takes to hold up the legacy of the Briny Bulldog? Tune in each week to find out if our little crew has what it takes to stand up to the pirates of the blood-soaked waters. Dark Fortunes is available every Monday on iTunes, Spotify, and Google Play. Set sail for high seas adventure.